This from Julie G to start the show, Denton. Kevin, the Olympics are great. I hope you'll do more on them this week than you did last week. The gymnastics are the best they've ever been. Thanks in advance for your coverage of the Olympics. Don't thank me yet, Julie. Don't thank me yet. For starters, I'm not going to lie here. It's been on in my home, or it was yesterday and last night, but it was mostly others watching it. I've watched a little to basically no Olympics so far, including missing the U.S. beatdown of Serbia yesterday in basketball. Also, by the way, Julie, we didn't do much Olympics last week because they hadn't started yet. They started on Saturday. I know that there was some soccer and tennis and, I don't know, handball early on. We do have Mike DeCourcy, our good friend, on the show today at 11:35. He's covering the basketball in Paris. We'll talk some Olympics then, and I'm sure Denton will have some of it in his news. Other than that, you'll just have to keep tuned in to everybody. Denton is back. I had a couple of days at the end of last week as well. Denton, you were on a cruise. How'd that go?
I mean,
where'd you go? I forget where you went.
I went to Bermuda. As much as I do love you and the Olympics, I'd still much rather be in Bermuda right now. But alas,
Bermuda's lovely.
I am back. Expensive island. Not a lot of cheap souvenirs there.
Oh, let me tell you. I have been to Bermuda 4 or 5 times. And it is up there among the most expensive vacations I've ever taken. Everything there is a fortune. So wait, so you just took a cruise to Bermuda, and then did you stay in Bermuda?
Yeah, so we stayed there. We got there at like noon one day and stayed there overnight, and then we had the next morning there until noon. So a full 24 hours, but it was overnight, yeah.
So where were you? Were you like in downtown Hamilton, or where were you? Tucker's Point, which is lovely, way out by, I mean, one of the great golf courses, Mid-Ocean, is just beautiful all the way out there at the end. Where were you?
So we were, I think, closer to Hamilton. It was wherever the port was, the cruise
yeah,
ship
Hamilton.
Port. So, yeah, we were by Hamilton,
yeah.
And we kind of explored the first day and had a catamaran excursion, which was pretty sick. I'm a big snorkel guy, so I like getting out there in the open water. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great snorkeling place. It's also a big-time moped place. I'm sure you noticed that. Lots of people on mopeds.
Ton of mopeds because apparently gas is $11 a gallon there.
It's very expensive. So when we've been there before, we've done the mopeds. Not my wife was not the mopeds. I love them, but apparently there are some serious accidents with the mopeds with tourists on mopeds. But I enjoyed zipping around that island. The best thing about Bermuda is how close it is. You know, it literally from DC, it's an hour and a half flight, hour and 45 minute flight. Was the cruise just there and back?
Yeah, it was just a 5 day. So it was there and back. You know, as a family, we like the 7 days that go nice.
Yeah. Well, good. Good. That sounds like a relaxing time. The weather was fine. No hurricanes to deal with.
No. So it rained a little bit, but I didn't really know. Like it rained early in the morning. Like we're talking like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning, and then maybe really, really late at night. But outside of that, like the weather was beautiful.
You know who lives in Bermuda? I'm pretty sure full time. I think he has a place, you know, out near wherever the Cook Estate was in Virginia, but I'm pretty sure John Kent Cook lived true. Anyway, well, welcome back. And you know, it's that time of year. I got this also. I saved this one after reading a bunch of emails and tweets earlier this morning to get caught up on the happenings of the last couple of days. This came from Rennie J. Rennie wrote, "Sheehan, big doings along the offensive line. Looks like Brandon Coleman has a leg up on Wiley. This is a massive development and a sign that Adam Peters knows what he's doing. Wiley was terrible last year. How good is it that they found a third rounder to take his place?" Rennie went on about many other camp developments, and I honestly would rather not read them all because Rennie, stop. This is training camp. 5 days of it at this point. They're going full pads today for the very first time. I mean, this is your first flight, Rennie? Seriously, your first season watching football? We don't know, and you don't know anything about anything yet. Nothing. Nada. Look, Denton, guess what? While you were away, I decided I was going all in early on something that I know you know I've been feeling and itching to talk about a little bit, and that is the most optimistic about a team that I've been since 2017. And we will save our official predictions for that first week in September, leading into the first weekend of the regular season. But I went in at 10-7 the other day. I just blurted it out. I just said, this is what I am. I just haven't been this excited about a player in a long time, and I maybe am really pushing it because I want to be right about Jaden Daniels. But understand this, Rennie. I'm excited, too, about what they are becoming as an organization. It's like this point in which we never thought we'd get to where we were a normal, functioning NFL organization and were games, regular season games. But I'm also excited, but I'm not about to start with every play-by-play report from those covering camp or everything that's written or everything that's said, although I think things that are said are actually more banged up. He's expected to return. They're practicing right now. Dan Quinn spoke before practice again today and said that Wiley would be back today. But we got to just keep a bit of a lid on the suggestions with respect to, you know, how it plays out, you know, in terms of the depth chart and who's going to make the team and who's going to play and who isn't. There are things you can learn here and there. And I'm going to tell you something. Dan Quinn said something about Brandon Coleman this morning, which we are going to get to and play for you. And it was encouraging. But again, it's early and they haven't even put the pads on. This is always interesting to me, and I feel like it's a broken record this time of year, every year for the last 10 to 15 years, but especially in the last 5 to 8 years, something like camp is social media'd out, and it's great, and you get to see things that normally you wouldn't get to see, but all it does is just kind of either raise expectations or lower on things that at this point truly aren't as telling as you believe they are. They're just not. You know, we could go back years, you know, training camp last year, the year before that, and talk about the players that were getting big discussion, you know, big play, you know, from Marcus Kemp. Remember, oh, this guy's big. He's got big hands. This guy's going to make the team. Mitch Tinsley. I know he's still on the team and on about the various players. I mean, I got briefly excited in a preseason game about Jarrett Patterson and thought this guy was productive in college. He's got great vision. Maybe he's one of these guys that just comes out of nowhere and ends up being big. I mean, how pumped up were people about the big dude at tight end, Curtis Hodges? Was it last year or the year before? We could go on and on and on. If I went back and looked for all of the tweets and all of the emails this time of year about players and about what's going on, it just isn't meaningful. It does might not turn out to be correct, but it's not on anything real at this point. We have a long way to go. We are still, you know, at this point, we are still 12 days away from the first preseason game, 13 days away from the first preseason game. I think I said this last week and maybe previous to the overall camp beginning, but I think we'll learn something. And again, it'll be more about what's said than what we see. But I think the practices, the joint practices with the Jets and the Dolphins, will actually be in many ways revealing of something than the preseason games themselves. This from Hector. What is the deal with some of these helmets? These are hideous. And he's not talking about the actual...
I'm looking for the official name, because I remember what it was. But could you imagine seeing one of those in the games? It looks like... Remember that big hat that Brian Robinson wore last year that everybody loved? It looks like that.
Yeah.
They're guardian caps is what they're called.
Yeah. He went on to say that Luke McCaffrey... I know this. They have the option, I'm pretty sure, to wear these helmets this year. Maybe it's just the interior linemen that are... I have no idea. They're not... I agree. They're not very attractive looking. I mean, there are a couple of things that... I was talking to Scott yesterday. You know, they've got the Hall of Fame right on ESPN. Jason Kelce will make his debut as part of the overall broadcast. He's really excited about Jason Kelce, by the way. Really, really likes him a lot. But the Thursday night game this week... So, by the way, this will be the first week of forever weeks with football, even though it'll be mostly preseason football for the next 4 or 5 weeks. ESPN ABC game. And we were talking yesterday, and I just said, you know, it's going to be very, very different looking for a lot of NFL fans that will tune into this game for at least the beginning, because it's just great to see NFL football back on TV. And they're going to be like, what's going on? He said, we're doing a whole thing on just that, just to prepare people in the pregame for what the kickoff rule and what it's going to look like and what the various strategies are. Quinn was asked about that a couple of times before practice today, too. But that's going to look different. And then if you throw these, you know, have you found the description for the helmets? Because I'm forgetting what they are.
I believe that is correct, yeah. Definitely so, offensive linemen, but I believe skill position guys can wear them.
So imagine in the opening kickoff on Thursday night, you got this weird-looking kickoff formation, and they're all wearing guardian caps. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll wear them in the preseason just to protect themselves in games that don't matter. I don't know. I'm assuming we're not going to see many of the guardian caps. I'm betting we don't. But we're going to see the new kickoff rule Thursday night. Caleb Williams, I doubt he'll play, even though he's been named starter. And I would assume that C.J. Stroud's not going to play either. You know, this game, this Hall of Fame game, is always just an absolute, you know, joke, because nobody that plays in the regular season as a starter typically plays in this game. Until recently, this was the fifth game for the two teams that played in it. Now it's the fourth preseason game for those that have it. But we will get to see NFL football on Thursday night. Looking forward to that. Every Monday during the every Monday period, covering the team, and he'll be on with us a couple of times this week to get ready for the final week of just camp. And then next week there will be the joint practices with the Jets leading into the first preseason game. I did want to mention this because I am, you know, Rennie's excited about Brandon Coleman, and again, he's apparently an incredible athlete. I'm excited about a lot going on, but again, I wouldn't read too much into, with Wiley being a little bit banged up, what that means with respect to the starting offensive line. You might be right. I just don't know if you're right today. But I have heard some really good things about Jaden Daniels, and it's not so much just the on the field stuff. It's the off-the-field stuff and just how easy he is to work with. And that's encouraging. Sam Cosmi, did you find that sound that I asked you to find? It was on Good Morning Football this morning. Sam Cosmi talking about Eric Bieniemy, but also talking about Jaden Daniels. Did you find that for me, Denton, or not? I asked you kind of late.
Yeah, I haven't found it yet. I'm still looking for it.
Well, I'll paraphrase what I heard him say. Cosme essentially said, and it was Good Morning Football on NFL Network this morning, or maybe it was yesterday morning. I saw it actually now that I'm thinking about it, which means it was probably Saturday or last week. But he said that the most interesting thing about Jaden is that he's clearly a team guy, not a me guy. And Sam Cosmi can be pretty outspoken. He also kind of ripped into Eric Bieniemy's play calling last year. That was another thing that they played. Everything, you know, it's early. They haven't had any adversity yet. You know, often you don't learn anything about anybody in any situation, especially professionally, until there's adversity and how they deal with adversity. And they haven't had any of it yet. None of them have. You know, AP, DQ, you know, all of the initial, you know, significant figures in Ashburn. Everybody's happy right now. Everybody's positive because they have not played a game, which means they have not lost a game at this point. But they will. And there will be adversity, especially in a rookie season for a rookie quarterback. And how he deals with that and how his teammates deal with it will be very telling. But so far, the word about him, the person, is humble but confident. And Dan Quinn spoke to this last week. Dan Quinn said there's a very fine line, you know, with a young player when they come in. They can't be the guy that's got all the answers because they're a rookie and they don't have all the answers. At the same time, they can't be totally deferential either, especially when they're the quarterback. You know, you can't really, you can't put out this lack of belief in yourself, lack of confidence. It's like that inside straight of when you look at a guy or you look at a girl, and we all know this from, it can be in business, it can be in work, it can be in sports. It's that person that you know is absolutely competent and confident, but is also all about everybody around him and not just absolutely consumed with a massive ego. It's really, it's a fine line there between the both of them. And Quinn did a really good job. I mean, he doesn't say much. Dan Quinn says very little. And I think it was on Thursday or Friday of last week. I thought it was so interesting how he, you could tell he was really trying to explain how important it is for a player like Jaden Daniels to exude confidence, yes, but also be humble in the same moment and be a guy that doesn't have all the answers. And that's what Sam Cosmi said about him last week, is that was the most obvious thing. If you're working at doing both, it's probably not genuine. You just are that person. Hopefully, based on everything I've heard and everything that's been said, that's what we have at quarterback. And then the on-the-field stuff would be rather important as well. All right, there were a couple of things Dan Quinn said today before practice that I wanted to play. He did say something about Brandon Coleman. He also weighed in on the corners, which there have been a lot of them playing at various points in time so far as well. You'll hear some of Dan Quinn's most important, I guess we should say, sound bites from before training camp today. The first one in pads, following a day yesterday in which roughly 3,000 fans attended on the first available to the public training camp. Really nice turnout yesterday out in Ashburn. It included the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. All right, we'll get to Dan Quinn's, some of what he said before practice today, but let's start with a what do you got.
All right.
What do you got?
So the U.S. beat Serbia yesterday. Here's some Olympic talk for you, Julie. 110-84. They were down early. I didn't see this game, just read about the game. And then they really laid it on Nikola Jokic and company, Bogdanovic, three or four NBA players in the game. I think Canada actually has the most NBA players of the other countries not named the United States. Right, Denton? I'm pretty sure the Canadians have the most NBA players.
Yeah, they do.
Serbia is supposed to be a contender in this thing, and it was a non-competitive game yesterday, 110-84. LeBron continues to play well. LeBron's playing at a level at 39 years old in his career, as we've been talking about for 6 months now, 4 months anyway, that is beyond where he was 5, 6, 7 years ago. I'm convinced of it. But beyond that, the story that really came out of yesterday's win is that Jason Tatum, now a multi-year in a row first team All-NBA player, a championship player for the Boston Celtics this year, did not play in the game at all. He was healthy. He did not get into the game. LeBron played, Embiid, Booker, Drew Holiday, Curry, Durant, Adebayo, Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, and by the way, his teammate, Derek White, Jason Tatum's teammate, Derek White, played in the game, played 16 minutes. These games, by the way, just so you know, are 40 minutes. You know, so they're not the NBA 48 minutes, and they played 10 of their 12 players. The other player not to play in the game was Tyrese Halliburton. But Jason Tatum did not play at all in the first game. And Kerr was asked about this afterwards, and he said, quote, "Jason will play. Next question, which is if he plays, who doesn't? But we're going to need him, and part of his job for me is to keep everybody engaged and ready, because my experience with this is crazy stuff happens." And he did say that Jason handled it with the professional class that he expected. He said it's hard to play even the 10 players that they played. There was talk with respect to the matchup that they ended up playing three centers in the game, or three bigger players. Adebayo, Davis, and Embiid all played because Serbia is really big. There was some discussion that because Serbia wasn't very strong on wing players, that's one of the reasons that Jason Tatum didn't play. Look, I understand it's a 40-minute game. You got 12 players, and 40 minutes, it's hard for college coaches in a 40-minute game to get 10 players into a game. You know, most college benches are 3 to 4 players max. Sometimes the benches are really short. But Jason Tatum not playing is really interesting to me. The matchup thing can only go so far. You know, if you lost your spot during the game as a head coach and it just didn't occur to you or any of your assistants that Jason Tatum hadn't been into the game yet, you know, that's fine. That happens on occasion, and they were playing well. But this is a guy that for Celtics fans and some NBA fans have argued is one of the top 5 players in the game. You know, we had this conversation during the NBA playoffs into the NBA finals in the matchup against Dallas. And for many years, I've said, if you don't have a debatable top 5 player in the game, you can't win the title. And it hasn't happened. You know, since 2004, the 2004 Pistons were the last team without a debatable top 5 player that won a title. And, you know, you could certainly debate that Jason Tatum is a top 5 player by, you know, using the first team All-NBA selections of the last 3 seasons, in which he's been one of the top 5 players picked. But I have said to you, Denton, as we had these conversations, to me, Jason Tatum is not a top 5 player. Is he a top 10 player? Yeah, he's close. Jaylen Brown's close too. But I've said they're kind of somewhere between 8 and 12, 8 and 14. the two of them. Now, to have both of them in that conversation along with everything else they have, it's a great team. But even though I don't think he's a top five player, you could debate that Jason Tatum's a top five player. Hence, the streak continued with Boston winning in the NBA Finals of having a debatable top five player on the roster, or you don't win the NBA Finals. But I don't know. Is this first game, would it be an overreaction? It might be. I'm open to it being an overreaction. But is it possible that Steve Kerr and his staff, which includes guys like Mark Few, college coach, Eric Spoelstra, one of the best, Tyronn Lue, that they don't see Jason Tatum as a top 10 player? Or is it really about the matchups? I think the matchup thing can only be taken so far. You know, Kevin Durant, by the way, outstanding in the game. And if Kevin Durant had not played well, if he hadn't shot it well, he was 8 of 9, he was 5 for 5 from behind the arc, had 23 points, LeBron had 21. You know, if Durant doesn't play, you know, that well, if Booker, let's just say, doesn't play well, he did as well, maybe Jason Tatum sees time. But it's clear, like this idea, yeah, we're not, it wasn't a game with wings. I think Anthony Edwards is a wing, don't you? I mean, Kevin Durant on this team is more of a wing than he is a big. Devin Booker isn't really, you know, I guess you could say he's a little bit of a two-guard, point guard. But, you know, he's looking to shoot off of the wing. LeBron's more of a wing. I don't know. I thought it was really strange. And if they just lost track because the game moves so much faster, and it does, 40 minutes is 8 minutes less than an NBA game. I guarantee you this, Denton, he's going to play a lot in the next game.
Yeah, they're going to make sure he gets some minutes. Well, I think the thing is that Kevin Durant was back. And he was a flamethrower
exactly.
in the
I understand
first half.
That.
I mean, he had 21
at
in
all.
The first half.
He did not leave the bench, though. That's the point here.
Right. I mean, I would have taken the 11 minutes that Joel Embiid got and given 12 of them to Jason Tatum. Because lost in this whole, like, bigs thing, Joel Embiid is a tough watch. I mean, he was abysmal the first, like,
is
6 minutes.
Is he still hurt?
He's hurting me. So I'll say yes to that. I mean, He does the thing, Kevin, that you and I hate that he does in the NBA, but he's doing it with a great roster. He just stands at the three-point line. I'm like, buddy, you got Steph Curry, Devin Booker, and Drew Holiday on the floor. We don't need you at the three-point line. Like, you got to get in there. I know Jokic is a big, scary dude, but you got to get in there and be dominant. He was turning the ball over. He's foul baiting. Oh, my God. He sucks to watch. I take all those minutes and give them to Jason Tatum, because regardless how you feel about Tatum, he's not going to screw you for 6 minutes and have you down 12 points to a bunch of Serbians.
Well, let me just say this about Joel Embiid. When he's healthy, he's great as an NBA player. He is a massive, massive force when he's healthy. Of course, he just is never healthy. So that's an issue. I didn't watch the game, but it sounds like he was wretched in the game. You know, the U.S. men's next game is against South Sudan, the team that nearly upset them as a 43.5-point underdog in the lead-up to the Olympics. I just thought when I saw this story, and again, I didn't see the game, I think Jason Tatum's one of those conversations that for NBA fans, it's an interesting conversation. I love Jason Tatum, the guy, the player. I think he's great. I just don't and never have thought that he's in that elite, elite conversation. You know, even though he gets voted to it all the time at this point. He was not the MVP of the finals. His teammate was Jaylen Brown. And by the way, I thought deserved it. It got close there at the end, but I thought Jaylen Brown deserved it. As, by the way, Jaylen Brown was also the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals. He'll play in the next game against South Sudan, I guarantee it. He might start. You know, Kevin Durant, I haven't thought about this a lot. Kevin Durant is now considered one of the great Olympic players or U.S. international competition players of all time. You may have a better sense of what he's done, but I was listening to something this morning, and he's been outstanding as an international player. And by the way, the international game obviously fits him to a T.
I think he's coming up on Carmelo Anthony's record for most international points scored. So he might end up by the end of this Olympic game, especially if he played like he did yesterday, being the all-time Team USA leading scorer.
And who is right now?
Carmelo Anthony is right now. I believe he took it from Chuck.
Right.
Because Chuck was great during the 92 Dream Team run.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Just an interesting thing. How are the women doing so far without Caitlin Clark? Are they winning?
They're going to play today. They play today, I believe, at 3 p.m. Eastern time. They're one of the last games to go today. They're taking on Japan.
Dawn Staley did. I like Dawn Staley a lot. I think she's got real personality in her incredible directness. She's tough. Her teams play that way. She's actually, to me, as big of a star in that WNBA, or I mean, in the college women's game, as we watched all year, other than Clark and Reese, I guess, and obviously was the coach of the national championship South Carolina team. She said about Caitlin Clark, she did an interview with Mike Tirico, and I did catch this. Tirico asked her about Caitlin Clark, and she said, look, we were looking for the best, and at the time that the team was picked, she wasn't yet playing well. But she admitted that if they were picking the team today, that Caitlin Clark, the player today, is much different than Caitlin Clark, the player a month or a month and a half ago, and that she'd be in serious consideration for the team. Now, that to me, that should have never mattered, because as long as she was somewhat close enough, you put her on the team, because somebody was tweeting out pictures of just like the press conference for the women's team. It's like nobody shows up for this thing. Exactly what Christine Brennan had suggested. Christine Brennan's covered, I don't know, 9-10 Olympics. And she said the lack of attention for women's basketball has been just embarrassing over the years. Like, you show up for a press conference for their coach or their key player, and they're like two people from the U.S. there. And that would have completely changed had Caitlin Clark been a part of the team, not to mention the potential upside in revenue. We've talked about this. Imagine how many Olympic Caitlin Clark jerseys would have been sold. But Dawn Staley was very, very complimentary of the player that Caitlin Clark is now. She just said she's as good a passer as we've ever seen in our game. That's pretty big-time stuff. But whatever. So they start today, you said?
Yeah, they play Japan a couple hours after we sign off.
Okay. In the U.S. men's bracket, and I don't know what the women's bracket is, but, you know, they've got the group stage stuff, and they're in with Serbia, Puerto Rico, and South Sudan, who is their next game, South Sudan. So there's the group stage, and then I don't know how that works after. Does it get to 16? How many groups are there?
I believe there's four groups, and then you get the top, definitely top team of each eight. Group. Yeah, it's a top eight, and then you go from there, elimination style.
Yeah, so you get to the quarterfinal round. Am I right that Canada's the second pick behind the U.S., or is it France?
No, it's Canada, especially if you look at the gambler's market. Canada, I think, was like plus 1,000 to win it, and then France was a little behind them. Although I'll tell you what, I watched Victor Wembanyama against Brazil on Saturday. Oh, he's going to be scary in like 2 years in the NBA. I mean, that dude is silly.
Well, yeah. Yeah. All right. Dan Quinn, a couple of things that he said before practice today when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
So as we just mentioned, Team USA men's basketball skates past Serbia 110-84 yesterday. Kevin Durant had 23, 21 of those coming in the first half. LeBron added 21. Jason Tatum didn't see the floor. Elsewhere this weekend in the world of swimming, Katie Ledecky finished third in the 400-meter freestyle. That's traditionally been her best event, and she gets the bronze medal in that one. In Major League Baseball, Nationals lose 4-3 to the St. Louis Cardinals. DJ Hurts struck out 8 in 5 innings. The team also traded Jesse Winker to the NL East rival Mets. The Nats will be receiving pitching prospect Tyler Stewart. In the NFL, Lions reach a 3-year, $60 million extension with left tackle Taylor Decker, continuing their massive spending spree. And then the quarterbacks, hot damn, it was a good day to be a quarterback on this weekend. Jordan Love became the highest paid player in NFL history, 4 years, $220 million. This came 3 hours after Tua's 4-year, $212 million deal. And that's what's trending.
So Dan Quinn held his pre-training camp practice press conference this morning. And there were a couple of interesting quotes that I wanted you guys to hear. Again, I am a big believer that listening to what these coaches and sometimes players say can sometimes be more revealing than what you actually see, certainly on social media. Now, I will also admit that Dan Quinn doesn't give you much, you know. Great question there, Paul. And then he'll just, you know, rip off an answer that had nothing to do with the question. But today, there were a couple of things that I thought were interesting because I watched it. And old DQ was up there and had a couple of things to say on Jahan Dotson, Brandon Coleman on the punt return and kickoff return, and on the corners. But I wanted to start with, because we haven't heard a lot about Jahan Dotson really this entire offseason. There's just this expectation that he's the second best receiver on the team, talent-wise. But we haven't heard much about, you know, what he looks like, how he's doing, what the coaches think of him. And so when someone, and I forget who it was, asked about Dotson, I was interested to see and just watch Quinn answer the question about a guy who was a first-round pick back in 2022, correct? Yes. Here's what Quinn said.
And with regards to Jahan Dotson, just curious, like, as a guy who was obviously coaching against them last year, what was sort of your thoughts on him as a player, and what have you seen from him in camp? He obviously didn't have, he's admitted, not as good of a year as he had as a rookie. Where have you seen his progress, if you've seen progress so far here?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing I think of with him is, like, really good ball skills. So, like, backhand, behind, you know, like, if it's in the catching radius, it's a pretty good shot that he's going to come away with it. I thought he's got, and he's also a good route runner. So, to set somebody up, to work a leverage and work back. So, he's pretty savvy in that way. And so, being around Bobby and having an understanding of, you know, what it takes to play it, I've been pleased. And so, when we get the ball in his hands, we're going to try to make plays and finish. And that's been one of the emphasis for a lot of the players after the catch, you know, what takes place. And I'm hopeful that you see that at practice where guys are down the field finishing with them to say, hey, can we extend plays? And so that's one of the big emphases for him as well.
Yeah, the idea of, you know, he's talking about Bobby Engram, their wide receivers coach. Look, Jahan Dotson's had great ball skills going back to Penn State. That was always one of the things that was very noticeable. The big catch radius, despite his size, called him a savvy route runner. But it's about after the catch. We've seen moments with Jahan Dotson after the catch. In some ways, I actually think Dotson's more of a threat with the ball in his hands post-catch than Terry is at times. You know, I think about some of the electrifying plays. Go back to the 2022 season when they actually had meaningful games at the end of the year. The game in the Meadowlands that ended in a tie. You know, that was the ridiculous Taylor Heinicke play on fourth down to keep the drive alive, and then they went down. And Dotson caught the ball in the middle of the field, turned it into a big-time yards-after-catch touchdown that forced OT, and Washington and the Giants tied that game. But I'm looking forward to, as I've mentioned many times before, not just Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury, but to see what it means for some of the other players who were clearly hampered last year. You know, I'm not going to get into a big Eric Bieniemy conversation right now. Most of you understood how I felt at the time and understand how I feel now. But it was a very dysfunctional season for the team, both sides of the ball and the offensive side of the ball. Terry, you know, was certainly productive. Jahan, not as much. And I'm interested to see what a creative system with a quarterback with, I believe, more emphasis on a run game can do for a guy like Jahan Dotson. You know, I look at them offensively, and I know that the biggest perceived weakness, as we talked about last week, is the offensive line, and that's fair going in. But I don't see a skill position deficiency compared to some teams. I don't see an elite group of skill position players, but I think it's solid. You know, I think the running back position looks certainly better than average with Robinson Jr. and Eckler. And I think the receiver situation is certainly at the worst case, you know, slightly better than average with Terry and Jahan. And then it's an issue of who comes next. It could be Luke McCaffrey, could be, you know, De'Ami Brown or Crowder or Zacchaeus. We'll see. The tight end situation, you got an older guy who's healthy for the first time in a while in Zach Ertz, and there's certainly some, you know, some built-in expectation by, you know, based on the way he was drafted, some of the excitement about how he, you know, the post pick discussion about Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, the comparisons to Cooley in terms of physical build and look. But I like their skill position group. It comes down to the coordinator, the quarterback, and then, you know, the offensive line. I think more so in today's game, it has to do with the coordinator and the quarterback. But the offensive line will be important too. I'm looking forward to Jahan Dotson this year. If this isn't a Jahan Dotson, you know, sort of breakout career year, it may be that they just didn't get it right, the last regime on Dotson. That's possible. You know, Jahan Dotson's career, you know, for rookie season, obviously did not, he missed games because of injuries, but we saw what he could be. You know, he averaged 15 yards per reception, had 7 touchdowns. Last year, 49 catches, played all 17 games, but the average per reception was much less, didn't get into the end zone nearly as much. You know, the percentage of catches based on targets, not super high. I'm looking forward to Dotson this year. I think this is a big year for Jahan Dotson. We've talked about who this is, you know, a big year for, Jamin Davis, Emmanuel Forbes, guys like that. I think it's kind of a big year for Dotson. I was glad to hear, I mean, Quinn's been pretty positive when he is asked specifically about players, but to hear him talk about, you know, ball skills and route running savvy, and then to talk about, you know, we're really, you know, working with all of our guys, Bobby Engram is, on what we're able to do after the catch, which also would indicate that, you know, in the Cliff Kingsbury system with Jaden, we will see a lot of line of scrimmage throws. We'll see defenses really stretched out laterally. You know, we'll see some RPO. We'll see some bubble. We're going to see guys get the balls, you know, in their hands pretty quickly. And of course, one of those guys who will have the ball in his hands pretty quickly is the quarterback. Quinn had more, and we'll wait until the other side of the break to play it. But he did weigh in on Brandon Coleman's progress so far, for whatever it's worth. Also on the kickoff return rules and the corners, Forbes and St. Juice specifically, he addressed in the pregame today, press conference. You'll hear that when we come back. 11:35 next hour, we'll talk some Olympic hoops with Mike DeCourcy, and Ben Standing will join us from Ashburn after practice at noon. So Dan Quinn held his pre-training camp practice press conference this morning. And there were a couple of interesting quotes that I wanted you guys to hear. Again, I am a big believer that listening to what these coaches and sometimes players say can sometimes be more revealing than what you actually see, certainly on social media. Now, I will also admit that Dan Quinn doesn't give you much. You know, great question there, Paul. And then he'll just, you know, rip off an answer that had nothing to do with the question. But today, there were a couple of things that I thought were interesting because I watched it. And old DQ was up there and had a couple of things to say on Jahan Dotson, Brandon Coleman on the punt return and kickoff return, and on the corners. But I wanted to start with, because we haven't heard a lot about Jahan Dotson really this entire offseason, there's just this expectation that he's the second best receiver on the team, talent-wise. But we haven't heard much about, you know, what he looks like, how he's doing, what the coaches think of him. And so when someone, and I forget who it was, asked about Dotson, I was interested to see and just watch Quinn answer the question about a guy who was a first-round pick back in 2022, correct? Yes. Here's what Quinn said.
And with regards to Jahan Dotson, just curious, like, as a guy who was obviously coaching against them last year, what do you kind of, what was sort of your thoughts on him as a player, and what have you seen from him in camp? He obviously didn't have, he's admitted, not as good of a year as he had as a rookie. Where have you seen his progress, if you've seen progress so far here?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing I think of with him is, like, really good ball skills. So, like, backhand, behind, you know, like, if it's in the catching radius, it's a pretty good shot that he's going to come away with it. I thought he's got, and he's also a good route runner. So to set somebody up, to work a leverage and work back. So he's pretty savvy in that way. And so being around Bobby and having an understanding of, you know, what it takes to play it, I've been pleased. And so when we get the ball in his hands, we're going to try to make plays and finish. And that's been one of the emphasis for a lot of the players after the catch, you know, what takes place. And I'm hopeful that you see that at practice where guys are down the field finishing with them to say, hey, can we extend plays? And so that's one of the big emphases for him as well.
Yeah, the idea of, you know, by the way, he's talking about Bobby Engram, their wide receivers coach. Look, Jahan Dotson's had great ball skills going back to Penn State. That was always one of the things that was very noticeable. The big catch radius, despite his size, called him a savvy route runner. But it's about after the catch. We've seen moments with Jahan Dotson after the catch. In some ways, I actually think Dotson's more of a threat with the ball in his hands post-catch than Terry is at times. You know, I think about some of the electrifying plays. Go back to the 2022 season when they actually had meaningful games at the end of the year. The game in the Meadowlands that ended in a tie. You know, that was the ridiculous Taylor Heinicke play on fourth down to keep the drive alive, and then they went down. And Dotson caught the ball in the middle of the field, turned it into a big-time yards-after-catch touchdown that forced OT, and Washington and the Giants tied that game. But I'm looking forward to, as I've mentioned many times before, not just Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury, but to see what it means for some of the other players who were clearly hampered last year. You know, I'm not going to get into a big Eric Bieniemy conversation right now. Most of you understood how I felt at the time and understand how I feel now. But it was a very dysfunctional season for the team, both sides of the ball and the offensive side of the ball. Terry, you know, was certainly productive. Jahan, not as much. And I'm interested to see what a creative system with a quarterback with, I believe, more emphasis on a run game can do for a guy like Jahan Dotson. You know, I look at them offensively, and I know that the biggest perceived weakness, as we talked about last week, is the offensive line, and that's fair going in. But I don't see a skill position deficiency compared to some teams. I don't see an elite group of skill position players, but I think it's solid. You know, I think the running back position looks certainly better than average with Robinson Jr. and Eckler. And I think the receiver situation is certainly at the worst case, you know, slightly better than average with Terry and Jahan. And then it's an issue of who comes next. It could be Luke McCaffrey, could be, you know, De'Ami Brown or Crowder or Zacchaeus. We'll see. The tight end situation, you got an older guy who's healthy for the first time in a while in Zach Ertz, and there's certainly some, you know, some built-in expectation, but, you know, based on the way he was drafted, some of the excitement about how he, you know, the post pick discussion about Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, the comparisons to Cooley in terms of physical build and look. But I like their skill position group. It comes down to the coordinator, the quarterback, and then, you know, the offensive line. I think more so in today's game, it has to do with the coordinator and the quarterback. But the offensive line will be important too. I'm looking forward to Jahan Dotson this year. If this isn't a Jahan Dotson, you know, sort of breakout career year, it may be that they just didn't get it right, the last regime on Dotson. That's possible. You know, Jahan Dotson's career, you know, for rookie season, obviously did not, he missed games because of injuries, but we saw what he could be. You know, he averaged 15 yards per reception, had 7 touchdowns. Last year, 49 catches, played all 17 games, but the average per reception was much less, didn't get into the end zone nearly as much. You know, the percentage of catches based on targets, not super high. I'm looking forward to Dotson this year. I think this is a big year for Jahan Dotson. We've talked about who this is, you know, a big year for: Jamin Davis, Emmanuel Forbes, guys like that. I think it's kind of a big year for Dotson. I was glad to hear, I mean, Quinn's been pretty positive when he is asked specifically about players, but to hear him talk about, you know, ball skills and route running savvy, and then to talk about, you know, we're really, you know, working with all of our guys, Bobby Engram is, on what we're able to do after the catch, which also would indicate that, you know, in the Cliff Kingsbury system with Jaden, we will see a lot of line of scrimmage throws. We'll see defenses really stretched out laterally. You know, we'll see some RPO. We'll see some bubble. We're going to see guys get the balls, you know, in their hands pretty quickly. And, of course, one of those guys who will have the ball in his hands pretty quickly is the quarterback. Quinn had more, and we'll wait until the other side of the break to play it. But he did weigh in on Brandon Coleman's progress so far, for whatever it's worth. Also on the kickoff return rules and the corners, Forbes and St. Juice specifically, he addressed in the pregame today, press conference. You'll hear that when we come back. 11:35 next hour, we'll talk some Olympic hoops with Mike DeCourcy, and Ben Standing will join us from Ashburn after practice at noon.